You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Any port in a storm. Positions of relative safety and order in the chaos of combat. I've been fortunate enough to train extensively in a variety of martial arts styles. I'm fascinated by both the similarities and differences between these styles. All martial arts, in my experience, by their very nature, deal with the dangerous and disorienting world of violence. Combat can happen so rapidly that the information coming through your sensory organs and into your brain can be difficult to process effectively. This can be made even more difficult if you're in pain or are fatigued. Sometimes I call this concept fighting in a blender. One feature common to all martial arts with which I'm acquainted is that they all contain positions of momentary refuge, positions of relative safety, or at least less disorder, which can be sought out during the chaos of a fight. These are positions in which you reduce the variables of combat by limiting the options of your opponent long enough to clear your mind, get your bearings, maybe even get some rest, and perhaps also contribute to fatiguing your opponent. Whether you're fighting standing or on the ground, empty-handed or using weapons, these positions exist. They exist on a continuum. What I mean by this is that there are positions of near-total dominance of your opponent, like taking the back in grappling, or controlling the opponent's head with both hands in the Muay Thai clinch. Those are obviously fantastic and desirable positions to attain, but I am not referring to those positions in today's podcast. And of course, the reverse is true, meaning that your opponent may have you in one of those dominant positions himself, which is obviously not desirable to you, and also is not the subject of today's discussion. Rather, I'm discussing more immediately realistic and available positions you might seek against a highly skilled opponent whom you would like to control, but are having difficulty doing so. In that case, you may seek positions which, while they do not control the opponent, do succeed in limiting many of his options, reducing the chaotic nature of combat for a while. These positions are analogous to punting in football. For the moment, your offense is not working as well as you'd like, and you need to regroup, relying on your defense to protect you in the meantime. Often in these positions, your opponent, at least on paper, has the same chances which you do, like in a jump ball in basketball. But if you know that you can jump higher than your opponent, you like the jump ball. Similarly, in many of these positions, any advantage that you have will stem not from the position itself, but from the fact that you may be superior at playing that position compared to your opponent. The first example is more of a range, or a distance. The greatest distance that your opponent can reach with any attack, or any attempt to come to grips with you, is called the critical distance. Learning to judge this distance using the good old Mark I eyeball is of primary importance to any martial artist. Once you can do this, you can use movement to stay just beyond critical distance long enough to get your bearings and orient yourself. As I mentioned earlier, staying beyond your opponent's critical distance also means that your opponent is probably close to being beyond your critical distance as well, unless you have a huge reach advantage. So this would be a tactic that you would choose to use if you feel that your own outside footwork is superior to that of your opponent. It might also be a desirable tactic if you feel that your opponent is superior to you at fighting on the inside. Some martial artists, and I use the term loosely, use this as nothing more than a stalling tactic to avoid fighting altogether. On the other hand, a skilled fighter can use this stratagem to induce frustration in the opponent, perhaps goading him or her into reckless, charging attacks. If you're skilled at warding off these attacks, This can be an efficient way to get the opponent to burn up tons of energy in a short period of time, and also induce him or her to make bad tactical choices upon which you can capitalize. If you do not fear your opponent's infighting skills, another nifty use of spending time just beyond the critical distance and goading the opponent into reckless charges is to suddenly and unexpectedly reverse your tactics and close with him, protecting yourself with a structural configuration of your weapon or weapons, if you're carrying them, or your lead leg and arms, if not, to protect you as you jam his attack. Because the opponent is totally committing his closing movement, he will crash hard into your well-prepared jamming position, setting up whatever tactic you had in mind even better. In any version of the standing game, the opposite extreme from staying just beyond the critical distance is to be standing in direct physical contact with your opponent, in one of a number of configurations, most of which come under the heading of the clinch. Again, this is especially useful if you feel that you fight better than your opponent does at this very close range. One interesting feature of any position in which you're in physical contact with the opponent for an extended period of time is that you are now receiving information from your sense of touch to add to the information you're gaining from your vision and hearing. While it might not be immediately apparent that this is a safer place than at normal fighting distance, in the hands of a skilled fighter, tactics in this close range can be confusing and tiring to an opponent who is less well-schooled in their use. One of the early giants in Bruce Lee's art of Junfan Kung Fu was Sifu Larry Hartzell. He was renowned for his ability to fight in close. His motto was, "Go to the heart of danger, and there you will find safety." Sifu Hartzell drew from jiu-jitsu, wrestling, judo, boxing, Filipino Dumog, Muay Thai, and many other arts to develop his particular system of fighting on the inside. These infighting positions can use gripping and holding, like the clinch of Muay Thai or Greco-Roman wrestling, or they can use pressure and movement, like the outside head-to-head position of boxing, or outside lines of engagement in weaponry. When fighting on the ground, the epitome of this type of position is the guard. The fact that you are forced onto your back indicates that your opponent is dangerous, yet you have still secured a position that is suitable for beginning the process of reversing the fight and taking control. I've dealt with the guard quite extensively in other editions of this podcast. In weaponry, one version of this type of position is much more short-lived, but still exists. It happens when attacking to or engaging on the outside line, sometimes while circling to the opponent's rear. Let's take fencing, for example. A common phenomenon in fencing is that people, especially less well-trained people, tend to want to beat, parry, and apply pressure with their blade more to the inside than to the outside. For a right-hander, this means from the right to the left. The human muscular and skeletal structure exerts force better to the inside than the outside in many cases. Simply put, forehand motions tend to be stronger than backhand motions. For example, when a right-handed person arm wrestles another right-handed person, they are attempting to force his arm from the center to their left. If you were to attempt to apply force in the opposite direction with the back of your wrist against the back of his, you would notice that not only does the palm of your hand not point that way, making it difficult to grip, you're also quite a bit weaker in that direction. Well-trained athletes have learned to and definitely can exert pressure efficiently to the outside, but it is far less natural. So, assuming that you and your fencing opponent are both right-handed, your natural inclination will be to beat, parry, and push with your blade from right to left. Another facet of this, especially in foil fencing, is that if you do succeed in using your blade to knock your opponent's blade to your left, you have also succeeded in exposing the entire target area of the front of his torso. In foil fencing, your arms are not legal target area. It's legal to use your weapon arm to cover target area, but not your left arm. If you employ the less natural motion and use your blade to knock your opponent's to your right, less of the target area of the front of his body will be exposed because he will have passed his weapon arm across it, creating a momentary shield that protects part of his front target area. The back is perfectly legal as target area in fencing, but for some reason, most beginners seem disinclined to attack it. You have a blade that is more than 2 feet long, an arm that is usually more than 2 feet long, and several joints along your arm and the artificial joint where your hand grips the weapon to create angles of attack. Because of this, and despite the fact that you often cannot see the opponent's back, it's actually much easier to score on than most people would think. Another natural inclination is to resist force with force, making it easier to induce your opponent to exert pressure to the inside. You can use this tendency to deceive him by suddenly disengaging your blade and allowing his to pass through. This exposes his outside target area, which consists again mostly of his back. So, attacking to the outside line against many fencing opponents puts you in a safer place and reduces the opponent's options, if only for a moment. If you make frequent use of this tactic, the net result may be that you will spend a large amount of your time in the fencing bout in a safer position than if you were using more standard tactics. Just as with the outside head-to-head position from boxing, this position is exploited with pressure and movement. Positions such as I have described today are useful for any fighter, but are especially useful for the aging but experienced fighter. Such a fighter's attributes are beginning to decline. He or she is probably slower, less flexible, and less powerful than in the past. One of the things that does make an old fighter more dangerous is that he or she already knows shortcuts to the best place to be against an opponent with superior attributes. This can create the illusion of speed, and the aging fighter's ability to move at the right moment, in other words, with a superior sense of timing, can create the illusion of having more power. These positions of refuge and sanity in the insane world of combat are not favorites for those who wish to entertain a crowd with their fighting abilities. They are often less sport positions than they are combat survival positions. And that's just what a warrior sometimes needs. A place where, when struggling with a deadly opponent, he can take a breath, clear his head, and get his shit together. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.